On the podcast today, we are going to dissect chapter 46 of the Tao Te Ching, which makes up the 46th episode of the 81 Meditations on the Tao Te Ching. And as usual, Guiyang will read Jia Fu Feng and Jane English's translation, and I will read Derek Lin's translation.
When the Tao is present in the universe, the horses haul manure. When the Tao is absent from the universe, war horses are bred outside the city. There is no greater sin than craving, no greater curse than discontent, no greater misfortune than wanting something for ourselves. Therefore, those who know that enough is enough will always have enough.
When the world has the Tao, fast horses are retired to till the soil. When the world lacks the Tao, war horses give birth on the battlefield. There is no crime greater than greed, no disaster greater than discontentment, no fault greater than avarice. Thus, the satisfaction of contentment is the lasting satisfaction. So in this chapter, Lao Tzu is discussing what is lost when we lose the Tao. Essentially, what happens to the world when the Tao is lost.
Yes.
So we go from contentment itself to desires.
Yes. Contentment to discontentment, obviously. Yes. Again, here Lao Tzu is talking about what happens when we desire something that we shouldn't desire. It's almost like desiring something is you are wanting something which is not yours to begin with, right? And from that frame of mind, you get to have this dissatisfied heart and mind, discontentment, and that naturally get to lead the violence.
Yes.
Pretty easily, right? Because you're desiring something that it's not yours.
No.
So, yeah, what's going to happen then?
Lao Tzu mentions in another chapter, do you know the contentment of contentment? And I think that this concept seems an illusion in the world that we live in at the moment, but a world that is infected with desires, a world that thinks that happiness comes at the end of fulfilling all these desires.
Mm.
Where Lao Tzu is going in an opposite direction and saying, you can have contentment right in this moment, right now, and you can eliminate all of those desires right here and right now.
Yes.
But desires itself arise when there is no contentment.
That's right.
That's what he's saying.
Mm. Yeah, desire is like a symptom when you have lost contentment. Right. And how do we fix it? How do we get out of that discontentment? How do we get away from that desire?
Yep.
Is from having that satisfying heart, contentment. Really.
Yes. Mm. Those who are satisfied don't need anything, right? That's what fulfillment is.
Mm.
And that's actually what the Tao Te Ching should do to you. It should fill your heart full of contentment and humility and compassion and essentially joy.
Yes.
Not because you got something from it, but it gave you a way of dissociating with desires of what the world thinks is right and wrong. And you've just come back to this state of ananda, of unassociated bliss.
Yes.
And so when you're in a state of unassociated bliss, you are naturally content. You don't need anything. You could buy someone a Ferrari. They don't need it.
Yes.
You could buy them a 5-bedroom house. They don't need it.
Mm.
They're content with less.
Yes.
They feel better with less, right? You and I have lived in big places and small places and everywhere in between. And it's always about what we feel comfortable in, right? It's about what we feel content in. And usually it's in less. It's not in more.
When, I mean, maybe a lot of people can resonate with this. When I feel like when we have like a big, in a big place and a lot of things, feel a lot of burden.
Yeah.
Like, and the first thing I would think of if you live in a big place, oh, there are too many rooms to clean. Right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of things that filled in those spaces also. It more come across to me as a burden, whereas if you have a small place and a few things that you really need, then that's all you need to really take care of, really. So it's life becomes much more simple.
Yep.
And yes, in this chapter, he talks about how having desire leads to violence and war, in a sense, right? And then using the horse analogy, when there is Tao in a nation, horses get to use to till the soil and make it fertile. So they use it for farming, which brings crops to feed the people in the village and whatnot.
Yeah.
And when there is when an absence, the Tao is absent in a nation, then horses will be used for a war battle,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And there is a story. There is a lot of stories similar to this, what I'm about to share in the book Mencius. Again, the book Mencius is compiled the talks of Mencius, compiled by his disciples. And one day, the Mencius went to this long journey to meet this emperor in a nation, right? Because Mencius was very respected by a lot of emperors in the nation, many countries at that time in China, ancient China. So the emperor was really happy that he made a long journey to see him, right? Oh, this wise person came to see me. So he first thing he said to Mencius was, oh, you came to see me in the long trip and something must come to my country. Some in a sense, a material gain kind of way that he said, some sort of a big thing will come to our country. And then Mencius was kind of straight away, he scolded the emperor. How can you think that first as a king of a nation? That if emperor would start to think like that, what's going to happen to the people who are serving for the king and also people below him and also just ordinary citizens, that'll ruin the entire country, basically. So emperor shouldn't bring the material gain before benevolence, basically. Mm. So he really scolded him, and he basically said, you can't be satisfied unless you take something what's not yours, when motivated by gain over benevolence.
Mm.
So how much he emphasized on not to desire something that you shouldn't be desiring.
Yep.
So desire always arises from the discontentment so that you want to take something what is not yours.
Yes.
So then naturally that will give you or a little bit of thought in your mind, giving, oh, I need to take something from somewhere,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So that leads to the violence
yeah.
and the war, yeah. furthermore.
Well, and that ties in with what you mentioned about the horses tilling the soil or going to war, because with the Tao, you are naturally fulfilled. Without the Tao, you feel you lack. And so the emperor feels he lacks, right? And so desires something. And so if we look at the world as it is now, when there's wars and there's discord and there's conflict, it's always coming from a sense of lack, of scarcity, or really a sense of lack, right? Where people feel like they aren't fulfilled, they don't have enough because they're not content. They desire something else, which is often the distance, without realizing that they have everything here right in this place,
yes.
right? In relation to the horses, right? Where Lao Tzu's mentioning that when the world had the Tao, horses were just tilling the soil, doing what they needed to do for the community. Without the Tao, we're going to war. We're using the horses to kill the opposition, right?
Yes.
And so there's two opposing aspects of this, right?
Mm.
Whereas the Tao way, with the Tao, with the horses, with someone who doesn't feel lack, they nourish existence.
Mm.
So the horses are nourishing existence, right? But if we look at the opposite way, we're destroying existence.
Right.
See, without Tao, you destroy the world. With Tao, you nourish the world.
Mm.
And this is what people need to understand. And so to be with Tao, we need to follow the tenets of what the Tao Te Ching is speaking about, right? Allowing the world to be, being content with your life as it is, not chasing artificial desires, right? Lao Tzu talks about in the Tao Te Ching about the desires of the belly and the desires of the eye. The desires of the eye are these artificial desires that social narratives and culture and that tell you you need to be successful, to have status and this and that, and it's all bogus.
Mm.
The desires of the belly are the natural desires we have, yearning for connection, yearning to eat food, obviously, to have shelter, to have comfort. Just simple things, right? Like, because without the desires of the belly, the desires of the eye mean nothing, because you're dead. Because you need connection, you need food, you need health, sanity, shelter, all of these things. And the Tao Te Ching is saying, why don't we revert back to these natural desires, which aren't really desires, they're just natural, right?
Yes.
We're just saying natural desires here, as opposed to these artificial desires that makes us train the horses to go to war, to take what we think is ours, but it's not ours, obviously.
Yes, I think, I mean, nothing can exist in the world outside of the earth, right? So that means, I mean, like everything is limited. If there is 100 in the world, you can take a little bit out of 100. It cannot get more than 100, right? So, but within the 100, people take more than other people, and like, so there's a limited amount of things that we can share, actually. But because some people are very greedy and they try to achieve something they shouldn't even try to achieve in material or non-material possessions and whatnot. So then, obviously, there is a violence, there is a conflict with one another. But if we know that there is only 100 that we can all share, people around the world, then we actually get to understand the place of our own, right?
Yeah, of course.
And that gives also a perspective. And again, like this chapter is, like you said, a little bit too far distant from how the world is right now. But it just gives you different perspective to look at, I think, and actually how greedy the leaders of the world are, actually, as well. And they obviously completely lost the Tao. That's why they're trying to fight for more, trying to just to take what's not theirs, right? But we have only 100 that we can share, really.
And they're trying to take from just the common people, right? They're trying to take from the common people, and that doesn't usually end well for them. This is what empires fall.
That's right.
They don't know that there's a fine balance where you can just sit, abaya mudra. It's okay, like, I'm good. We're good with what we have. We don't need more.
Yes.
But it's this yearning for excess. It's this yearning for just more and tapping into these desires, which destroy the world. But even though, as you said, it feels like we can't change the world, but you can improve your immediate environment as an individual, right? You can understand this from an individual perspective. And look, that filters out into the world, and that brings you great peace and equanimity. And nothing could be more important than that. It doesn't matter what the hell the society and the culture are doing. But if you've found this and you understand this yourself, if you know the contentment of contentment, then that's going to filter out and reverberate and affect people in your immediate environment. It just does, right? If you're a loving person, for example, people remember loving people, right? My mother was a loving person. I mean, she's got plaques in the primary school she worked in and all sorts of things. You know, people still talk about her today, and it's 20 years ago, right? And so this is what happens if you're a loving person, a giving person, a compassionate person, and someone just who is grateful to be alive, then that affects other people. It's almost as if people who lack contentment and tap into their desires are, in some sense, not just grateful that they're alive. They want more from life.
Yes.
Life itself is not enough.
Yes.
You know, oh, man, look, I mean, I exist, right? This is Sat Chit Ananda, right, in the Upanishads, this concept of existence, consciousness, and bliss. If you understand that you exist, there's a great bliss in that, just in tapping into I exist.
Yes.
Not I exist and something, right? And so I think that that's where we are all trained incorrectly as children. Because we come into a society that says you need to take this, you need to get this,
right.
You need to have the big house, the big car. You want to look the best in the neighborhood.
Mm.
You know, look at all these toys I have, as you were mentioning, with all these toys that people have. And possessions.
That's right.
Are what possess people.
Yeah, exactly. Again, big factor that comes with discontentment and desire is a loss of innocence, isn't it?
Mm.
Like from not having innocence, you become greedy, easily greedy, and you lose gratitude towards your life, as you were talking about.
Yep.
Satchit-ananda. Satchit-ananda's state can only come to us when we stay innocent.
Mm.
And that innocent is, again, actually come from the knowing that enough is enough.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
Again, the last line is saying, yeah, therefore those who know that enough is enough will always have enough. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, if you always seek what lacks in your life, and that's all you're going to see, and that's how your life is going to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you know that enough is enough, and you will always have enough.
Right? No, of course.
Oh, this is enough. Like, you know, what we have is enough. And from that place that you have, there's a gratitude towards what you have, because that's enough, right?
Yep.
Not too much, not too less, that's enough. And again, from that place, you also will get to have that innocent mind. That innocence, again, is, I think, innocence is nature itself.
Yep.
And that is the greatest gift to us all, so that it's something that we need to continue to keep that in our heart. Because that innocence is what makes your life beautiful. Like, not even, let's not even talk about to the world, about the world. Like, it's just your own life makes your life much more joyful, much more beautiful from the innocent state of mind, because everything that you have and that came to your life is kind of gift, in a sense. That from that place is what's not enough, really.
Yeah. And what destroys that innocence? The desire to know everything. That's what destroys it, right? You and I, we travel to very poor countries, and we like to stay in rural areas in India and Nepal, Thailand. So we are around innocent people who are disconnected from, like, what Western people know, right? Like, they don't know what sort of news is going on. They don't need to know about this type of political situation. And their hearts are so pure. It's almost embarrassing to be around them, because you realize inside yourself that you are a kind of a faulty human.
How useless to know all what we know, really. Yeah, like, yeah. It's pretty useless to almost having this access to too many things.
Yes.
Really. We don't, it's definitely useless.
It's useless. Like, this is why watching the news and this is completely useless. Yeah. It's not that you don't hear about important things. Like, you and I heard about the tragedy in Libya recently,
yeah,
right? And so it's tragic. But we don't have to stay up to the times like an addict looking at political disagreements, right, or whatever silly ideologies are going on. You've got to keep your mind shanti, because that's what allows you to be innocent and playful.
That's right.
And that's why you and I love being in India, yeah, for example, yeah, right? Because if we're having a tea on Pradakshina Road in Tiruvannamalai, the local Tamil people, they don't know any of this. All that's important to them, Arunachala,
yes,
Shivaji, that's it.
Yes.
Oh, you like our God? Yeah, of course. That's why I'm here.
Mm. Yeah, they love you.
Yes. Yeah, and there's not, like, and the connection is more pure.
Mm.
It's not about, like, what their political understanding is, or do you like this or that. It's just a real innocent conversation that has a great flow to it.
Yeah.
We've taken people there a lot, right? And one of our American friends, Scott, had a conversation with an Indian gentleman, first time out of the blue, but he was saying that there was, like, a real purity to the conversation, even though they could barely understand what each other was saying. But the connection is deeper, right?
Right.
The connection is deeper than if you know as much as the other person knows. Where all you're then doing is it's just verbal diarrhea clashing with each other, right? And this is a little bit to what Lao Tzu was saying about unlearning, because he was saying in the sense that learning, not just the Confucian mentality, but learning itself is like constantly learning, right? Is flawed because you're operating from the desire to know.
Mm.
It's a desire in and of itself.
Mm.
Whereas as you're alluding to, unlearning is the abiding in innocence. It's just, look, I don't know about that. And do I need to know that? Or right. How does that improve my life?
Mm. Actually, we witnessed that with our young children, actually, because they are exposed to the online world at a young age. So they know a lot.
Mm.
Maybe things that they don't need to know, but they do know. Right. So what happens is that they lose innocence at a very young age, right?
That's right.
So knowing too much unnecessarily, that is counterproductive.
Really. I remember Chris Williamson said on his podcast that he got an email from a 13-year-old girl saying, like, how do I live in this world? And he was sort of thinking, 13?
Yeah.
This is the result of being on social media, being on the internet.
Yes.
When I remember when I was 13, man, there was no ideas of sex, no ideas of any of this stuff. It's just play. It's just fun. Mm. You didn't know anything about politics because you, at 13, you're a child still. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, it's insane the world that we're developing where we're trying to make children become too mature too early.
Mm.
It's ridiculous. Let people naturally grow. And that's how you actually have maturity, because you've allowed your character to naturally grow without being interfered with.
The reason why we feel so distant from the pure connection with one another is also because of the situation that we have with the information overload world, that we always look for stimulation and this dopamine rush, right, these days, that, you know, when you feel a little bit of boredom, you need to fill that boredom with something, right? So always you look for what's going on this platform, what's going on in that platform, and you move from app to app and just endless, you know, process that you want to go through, And this dopamine rush is affecting us somewhat. So that I think also it changes biologically somewhat. And it gets to the younger people and children. And children get exposed to this as well, so that they will have the effects of it too.
Mm.
So from a young age, you develop this dopamine rush. And dopamine is, of course, it's an important hormone that we need to have,
yep.
But not all the time, right?
Mm.
So somewhat that changes us as a species biologically. So that puts us very distant, far away from our friends in Tamil Nadu, for example.
Yeah.
And I mean, we know those people in India, their life is so organic and natural. And they don't get triggered by being just boring for a few minutes, right?
Mm.
That's how they keep that pure heart and pure relationship with one another.
How often have we seen like a Westerner, for example, in Tamil Nadu, going off their head about something or yelling and angry about something, and locals are just like, what's the big deal? Like, what's like, they have a lot of compassion, but it's like, why are they so angry or frustrated about this particular situation?
Yeah, it's just something that's really nothing for those people, right? But for the Westerner, it's just because in their countries, things get done maybe too efficiently, right? So that's what they used to.
Yep.
But whereas things operate in India or in any other countries, a bit different. It could take a little bit longer, right? But they just can't handle that.
No. But as you say, like, you're almost creating a different person, right? Like, so for example, if we look at North Sentinel Island in India, India claimed the island, and some people have been there before, foreigners, a couple of times. Some have ended fatally, and this culture and the people are completely different because they've been untouched by the world. And so they might look at us and think, what we might look and sound and our energy may feel alien to them, right? And we have all of these things like planes and computers and phones, and it seems like we're off planet,
mm-hmm.
according to those people, right? Because they're really untouched by the world. They don't know what's sort of going on outside of their own local area.
Yes.
And so if we look at that as an example, what we're doing with young people, with AI, with this and that, someone who is 90 years old is going to look back and think, wow, like what's happening to our younger generation? You see this all the time, right? People who are born in the 20s, 30s and 40s look at the younger generation and feel completely alien to them because they grew up in a world where there was a lot more hardships because there was a lot more wartime, there's a lot more things that were happening around that time. But they were also allowed to play. They were allowed to go outside with their friends and just experience life as it is, right? They never had computer games or phones and this and that. It was much more organic, much more innocent, and people didn't know everything, right? And so that's a big thing. And so what we're seeing in the modern day is young people, unfortunately, in the youngest generation at the moment, will probably grow up with artificial intelligence, which will outsource a lot of things that are very natural to you and I. The concept of grammar, the concept of noun and verbs, and these things may disappear. And then the character of the individual can't shine through because if they've outsourced all of their skills to robots.
Yeah, that's right. Again, like grammar is something most basic rule in our languages that we actually get to learn at school very in detail as well. So nowadays some publishing house don't even use that many editors anymore because there is that AI.
Yeah, I know. And that's terrible, right? Like, so people are going to lose jobs and this and that because of artificial intelligence.
Yes.
Whereas even editors have their own character in editing. AI don't have it. AI is just a clean slate, just does it to a T, but it has no character.
Yes.
There's no naturalness.
And for especially for a younger generation and the children, in this sort of social circumstance, they only develop a lot of fear to the world because they just don't go outside and play and they just communicate with the screens. And even a toys, kids don't really use the toys much, much more because... Yeah, they're all on the screens, aren't they? So, yeah, they have so much a disconnection to the world. And again, that will only affect those children losing their innocence, which they're supposed to have in that age especially. But that's how you lose connection with the real world. And you only be fearful of the real world outside, right?
Mm.
Whereas that's the real world, right?
Yeah.
And when we were children... We could just go out and play without getting monitored by our parents or any adults around, right? But from that circumstance, you get to learn on your own, right? You make mistakes and you maybe fall from a tree or, you know, you cut yourself and whatnot. And that sort of experience accumulates. And that's how you learn what to do and what not to do and when to do specific things, and you learn to be humble at the same time, right?
Mm.
And all those experiences make your life only rich and that gives you great memories when you grow up as well. So it's natural environment, it becomes ever more important than before.
That's right.
Today, yeah.
That's right. And, you know, speak to that, the a lot of people and a lot of kids in schools now only use iPads and things of this nature, and handwriting is becoming a thing of the past.
Yeah, it's very sad that they don't even use pencils and rubber anymore. They're stationaries. Like, I mean, we all have the memories that when we start new semester, that we just get excited, get a new notebook, new textbook, right? New the color pencil and things like that, right? But there is no more of that kind of excitement anymore for children nowadays.
They would think I'm crazy writing a whole book by hand.
Yeah, and by hand, the handwriting only you can understand. So, yeah.
It's coded, I'm telling you.
Encrypted. Yeah,
that's right. Mm. But in speaking about what we've been speaking about, like the illusion that we're creating through all of these means of technology, through social media, through the way we're training our children, and through just the general mentality, and this even goes back to Lao Tzu because he mentions it in the Tao Te Ching, is this delusion that all desires can be fulfilled.
Mm.
And so that's where humanity is at, right? Most people think that they can fulfill all their desires. And so then you're on this perpetual loop of samsara, where instead of eliminating your desires and jumping off the wheel of samsara, we're jumping on the wheel of samsara and we just want to live life after life because we've got more desires to fulfill.
Yes, we need to fulfill that desires.
So then that is counterproductive to living a content and full life.
Yeah, exactly. Again, going back to this chapter, that's what happens when you're when you lose the Tao in your life, right? The life without Tao, world without the Tao, right? Then full of discontentment, full of disconnection with one another, full of desires that you undeserved desires in a sense.
Yeah.
So that cultivating Tao the natural way is, yes, it's essential.
That's right. And that's why Lao Tzu says in this chapter that there's only sort of one solution to this problem of trying to fulfill all desires, and that's to return to the Tao. It's to return to simplicity, contentment, humility, follow the naturalistic principles of the Tao Te Ching, and that actually allows peace and harmony and contentment just naturally come into your life. You're not following those desires. Desires are the target in all of the Eastern philosophical traditions, no matter whether it's Hinduism, Buddhism, or Taoism. Desires are the problem.
Yes. And again, in the Buddhist teaching, the biggest thing, the desire only brings more suffering.
That's right. That's right. So it's coming back to the Tao that we find that contentment. And so Lao Tzu is telling us in this, you know, the quest for lasting peace is contentment itself.
Yes.
It's not trying to fulfill all those desires.
That's right.
And so that's something that, you know, we need to know and also pass on to our children as well, is that there are so many desires in the world, right? But you can never fulfill all of them. You can only follow what is natural to you. And natural desires may arise, as we mentioned, but they won't possess you.
That's right.
Like artificial desires. Artificial desires possess people because they're based on the illusion of status and wealth and fame and fortune. But none of that really exists. And so this chapter is about coming back into harmony with that contentment of contentment that Lao Tzu spoke about. So guys, I hope you enjoyed and we'll see you guys next time.